Hi, I'm Janet Rosenbaum. I am an assistant professor of epidemiology at SUNY Downstate in Brooklyn. I research the relationship of educational factors in adolescents' later health outcomes. My research has been published in Pediatrics, the American Journal of Public Health, the American Journal of Epidemiology, and it's been covered by media, including National Public Radio and Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update. Today I'm talking about a case control study to identify factors preceding school suspension and expulsion in a nationally representative sample of adolescents. This is supported by a grant from the Spencer Foundation, and it was also supported by my previous position at the Maryland Population Research Center by their center grant, and also by my current position at SUNY. So I don't have any financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation, ever in my life even, not just in the past 12 months. So school exclusion, this is a big thing, and it's become bigger over the years. It's a normal part of adolescence to take risks and experiment with risky behavior. It's something that's been happening for millennia, that adolescents, it's evolutionarily advantageous for adolescents to seek things that differentiate them from their parents, and go out and, evolutionarily find a mate, or nowadays experiment with things that feel very dangerous, like smoking, drinking, driving too fast. School exclusion is used to punish a lot of this behavior. And it's increased due to a federal policy of zero tolerance. That the Federal Gun-Free Schools Act that was passed in the mid-90s when I was graduating from high school was the peak. It happened at the peak of gun violence in schools, the largest number of shootings in schools, by which I don't mean mass casualty incidents, but just the kind of shootings, like the year that the Gun-Free Schools Act passed. Somebody was shot in the freshman cafeteria in my high school about 20 miles north of here when somebody dropped their backpack and a gun went off that they'd brought to school. So the Gun-Free Schools Act passed in this environment where this type of thing was happening in urban schools. But it's increased the amount that students are excluded from school. We have schools as an institution in society to prepare adolescents for their adult roles. And when we exclude them from school, we're excluding them from the environment that's supposed to prepare them. So in 1972, 3% of white students were suspended each year, and 6% of black students. And in 2006, which is the most recent year that the Federal Office of Civil Rights has published the data, 5% of white students and 15% of black students, and that number is 20% for black male students. So it's a huge disparity, and this is actually in an environment where the academic disparities, that is, if you look at the test scores of blacks and whites, they've actually decreased. So school exclusion is a major concern. It could increase disparities in health outcomes and in life outcomes through labeling and secondary deviance. In other words, if you label kids as bad, they may end up taking on that label and doing more bad things that were worse than what they were doing in the first place. This study is part of a larger study that looks at outcomes of school suspension, but this study is looking at predictors of school suspension to identify children at risk of negative outcomes. Past research reveals that males, minorities, and students with disabilities are more likely to be suspended. There's some speculation that No Child Left Behind has increased the rate of suspension among students who are at risk of putting the school, of having low test scores, right? Because if you exclude them, their test scores don't get counted. There's been a movement that even though the first federal policy was for objective offenses like having a weapon or illegal drugs in school, a lot of states and localities began punishing subjective offenses with suspension, which raises the potential for discrimination because of this idea that minorities would be seen as being insubordinate and suspended for that reason, which is a very subjective reason. There have been some studies in Victoria, in Australia, and in Washington State that found that school suspension predicts antisocial behavior, in other words, violence and tobacco use, and actually other substance use 12 months after suspension. But there haven't really been any other longitudinal studies over a longer time period. My study actually looks at 5 and 12 years later after suspension, so we can get a longer set of outcomes. There's been one study in the epi literature that used NHANES, and they found that low serum cholesterol was associated with greater chances of school suspension, which is very exciting because this idea that there's some biomarker that predicts a social outcome and an educational outcome is very interesting. And it was also exciting because there was a lot of studies in the 90s as statins were coming about whether serum cholesterol predicts violent tendencies. And that was sort of raised as an objection to statins. And if low serum cholesterol would predict school suspension, that may indicate something about the likelihood, that would be very interesting about whether it predicts it. Unfortunately, obviously we know that NHANES is cross-sectional. This was a cross-sectional finding. So we don't know the order that maybe the school suspension caused the low cholesterol or rather than it coming beforehand. There's, again, another cross-sectional study in a hospital emergency department that found that people who were suspended also engaged in other risk behaviors, but obviously we don't know the order either. The data I'm using is the National Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Health, also known as AdHealth. This is a nationally representative sample of students grades 7 to 12, and 1995 is baseline, where I look at their pre-suspension factors. And I limit it to people who were never suspended or expelled at baseline. So then I can look at the incident's first suspension that happened in 1996. And then I get 5-year outcomes and 12-year outcomes. The predictors of suspension, I look at demographics, socioeconomic status, educational factors, which I have standardized test score and GPA, among others. I have parents' risk behaviors because there was a parent component to the AdHealth where they would ask parents about their risk behaviors, so we know about whether the parent smokes, whether the parent binge drinks, and whether, and then this is actually from the respondent, whether the respondent's father was ever in prison. This is the one outcome that's not measured at baseline, it's measured later, but I'm assuming that the propensity for the father to have been in prison existed even if the father wasn't actually in prison. This is just one predictor, though. And then we have a number of health and risk behaviors, including substance use, a depression score from many items, some biometrics, and then we have delinquency, which I use both as an aggregate variable and each delinquency item individually. As an aggregate variable, the Cronbach's alpha was 0.8, which is pretty good. So the goal of this study is to understand what we refer to in the Rubin causal model as the assignment mechanism to suspension. In other words, if we compare suspended versus unsuspended in a regular study, what's the level of selection bias into suspension? So what I use is to get that association for each factor, I use nonparametric tests for bivariate associations, and the nonparametric measure I use of that is actually a measure of effect size. I use the standardized difference. And the standardized difference, you can think of it as being like a t-test, but without a square root of n in it. In other words, it's independent of sample size. And I'm going to display them as log plots, which are a graphical way to represent standardized differences, named for Tom Love at Case Western University. And it's just a nice way of showing them, as you'll see. And then another portion of this project uses match sampling to identify a comparison group of non-suspended individuals, and the outcomes that I evaluate for that study are criminal justice involvement, educational attainment, and health outcomes and risk behaviors. So here are my results. These are predictors of suspension. The first measure is the propensity score, which is a summary measure of how likely somebody is to be suspended. But not neglecting that one, that summary measure, we see that the largest difference on an absolute level is grade point average. That students with lower grade point average have are more likely to be suspended. The next most common, the next highest standardized differences are delinquency score. Greater delinquency predicts greater chances of being suspended. But almost equal with that is the student's answer to the question whether they think they'll go to college. So we have both, we see that both marginalized students, students who are marginalized because they have low academic achievement and low academic expectations, are likely to be suspended, but also students who are delinquent. So there's sort of a combination of things working here. And then we see that a lot of the factors that predict suspension include things like being in a serious fight, group fight. These are all components of the delinquency, and they all predict suspension. And we see some substance use predict suspension, such as marijuana, ever using marijuana, or daily smoker. And then we see a lot of, and then on the other side, looking at the negative side, we see a lot of socioeconomic indicators that household income, low household income, low standardized test score, younger age, that's an interesting one, that younger kids are more likely to be suspended. And then parents who are college graduates are protective, that kids who have non-parent graduate parents are more likely to be suspended, and going to private schools being suspended. So in summary, we see that both delinquency and socioeconomic status and marginal academic achievement predict suspension. Expulsion is very similar, but we notice that there's the largest factor after, of course, the propensity score is being black and being black male, which suggests that there may be an aspect of discrimination that, as past studies have found, and also the qualitative studies that note the highly subjective nature of some offenses that are punished by suspension in certain localities, such as insubordination. And then we see a lot of delinquency type things. There's one aspect that's kind of interesting, which is that having a biological father who's obese is protective. And this a little bit goes along with the NHANES finding that low serum cholesterol predicts greater chances of suspension, but it's just an interesting finding. I don't think that my original set of analyses found that low BMI predicted suspension and expulsion, but in the end it didn't actually turn out to be the case. So this is a summary of what I just said. I just want to show you the results of my outcome study because I think this is also interesting to talk about after you match. So the red dots show the difference between the groups before you match. The blue squares show you the difference after I matched on these 38 factors plus the propensity score. And you'll notice that I get the inside set of dotted lines means that it's an insignificant difference, that I've matched very well, so that, for example, the delinquency score of the non-suspended youth that I'm going to compare with the suspended youth is not different or similar to the delinquency score of the suspended youth. And so on for all of the different factors. The GPA, for example, the grade point average, is similar after matching. I can do similarly for the these are actually black males that I matched on, because I looked separately at black males who are suspended, and I succeeded in matching on that. If you actually limit the sample to black males, I notice that there's an association with both being male and also the interaction of height and male, and suggesting that taller black males are more likely to be suspended. So here are the outcomes. I just wanted to give a little bit of a sense of what the outcomes of suspension are after matching. So I find that there's those who are 5 years later, those who were suspended as youth, are less likely to have a high school diploma and half as likely to have a BA. They're 50% more likely to be arrested, and I'm talking in terms of more likely as opposed to odds because I use a Poisson working model rather than logistic regression, so I'm not just misspeaking. The outcomes 12 years later are greater chances of being arrested either once or twice, or two or more times, greater chances of being in prison, greater chances of being on probation, lower chances of high school diploma, lower chances of BA, lower chances of graduate degree, and lower chances of desk job or sedentary job. There's some unpublished research by a colleague of mine that found that suspended youth are more likely to have dangerous jobs. So in other words, they compensate for their lower education by taking on more dangerous jobs that give them a wage surplus, but then they may suffer from that. I also found some health outcomes that the females are more likely to test positive for trichomonas in a urine sample. They're more likely, and everybody is more likely to smoke daily, and that's both at 5 years and 12 years. They're more likely to use alcohol almost daily at 5 years. They're more likely to have ever been dependent on cannabis at 12 years, and they used marijuana more days per year at peak. And interestingly, they're more likely to have stage 1 hypertension, slightly higher diastolic blood pressure, slightly higher mean arterial pressure, and slightly faster pulse rate. So, conclusions. Suspension and expulsion are more common among children who are experimenting with risky and antisocial behavior, more common among delinquent children experimenting with delinquent behaviors, and also more common with academically marginalized, and disadvantaged youth. Suspension is more common among children likely to have worse academic achievement, and expulsion may be used more commonly with black students, especially black male students. Adults who are suspended 12 years before have lower educational attainment, more involvement in the criminal justice system, more hypertension, and more daily smoking. A number of professional organizations have come out against suspension, including the American Bar Association and the American Association of Pediatrics. The American Association of Pediatrics recommends using positive behavioral intervention supports in lieu of suspension. In other words, supporting positive behavior instead of punishing negative behavior. This is something that also, I have a one-year-old child, and this is something that I've been learning as for discipline for a one-year-old is to use positive discipline as opposed to negative discipline as being more effective. And using that type of approach in the school system as well, which has been studied by Nick Iolongo at Johns Hopkins and many other, there's a lot of evidence for positive behavioral intervention supports could lead to better adult outcomes. Thank you very much.